back in my day.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. How was your day today? Mine was kind of weird. We can't get over this, all this torture stuff. The day after is occurring now. The day or two after, with reaction from the crazy right and reaction from the insistent left. The crazy right, using the typical kind of argument that they have used for so long, maintains that in releasing these legal memos, these are not intelligence documents at all, but in releasing these legal memos, somehow now we have, or Obama has weakened the United States, because now, I don't know what their rationale is, but now all of a sudden the people who would do us harm have all this information. And as we mentioned last night, all this information has always been available except to us. Now, we knew this was going on, you and I. The torture memos, though, are the ones that are just breathtaking in their twisting of language and their twisting of the law. The right wingers, therefore, are, you know, crazier than loons. They always are. This changes nothing in the whatever conflicts, real or imagined, that continue to exist between us and the people who don't like us, the people we don't like, you know, so on and so forth. The left, the Democrats, most of them, the progressives or the liberals, are demanding that Obama appoint a special prosecutor. The whole idea of a special prosecutor, and this got lost with Ken Starr and his just rabid pursuit of Bill Clinton. The whole idea of a special prosecutor is to investigate if there is any evidence produced that is that can result in charges. That evidence is presented to a grand jury. It's really that simple. That's the reason Ken Starr's investigation of Clinton never went beyond the stage that it went beyond. His release, Ken Starr, was not the impeachment thing. There were two things going on. Hopefully everybody understands that. I have a feeling that very few of us do. Ken Starr's job was to try to find criminal activity on the part of Bill Clinton, or Hillary Clinton, for that matter. It had nothing to do with impeachment. The impeachment hearings that occurred in the House Judiciary Committee and then moved to the Senate, that was something else entirely. So the point here being that appointing a special prosecutor to look at the criminal activity, and I think we're all in agreement, even those who would defend the action of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, have to agree, unless they're just, you know, morons or think we are, that there was criminal activity. The writing of these memos in an attempt to change that did nothing. I mean, you don't write memos, here in the United States, a bunch of, hack, lawyers working for the Bush crime family. You don't write memos and in that manner nullify international law, Geneva conventions, human rights, law, UN human rights laws, the Nuremberg, committee, what was done to Japanese, sold commanders for waterboarding Americans during World War II. Some of them spent a lot of time in prison, and if I'm not mistaken, after being convicted of waterboarding and other charges, some of these Japanese were executed. So for Jay Bybee, who is now a federal judge, and John Yoo, who is now a distinguished professor at University of California, Berkeley, and the rest of these animals, for them to write their little memos to give George Bush and Dick Cheney cover really doesn't amount to anything, unless we allow it to. And I think the Obama administration has decided to allow it to remove at least the people who committed the torture beyond the arm of the law. Now, he hasn't said the same thing about the people who wrote the memos, but maybe we're just grasping at straws here. But I want to share something with you that I got in an email. This is from a guy named Bill. This is what he writes. Dear Mike, I've been listening to you on XM for a bit over a year, a time in which you have most certainly enlightened me, educated me, and provided me with a different perspective. Well, different perspective, I would agree with. I would like to return the favor, although I would I would like to tell you a personal story. During the 70s, I lived in South America. I'm reluctant to name the country. Paranoia and fear are still as powerful today as they were then. Regardless, it doesn't matter. Many stories would be similar coming from countries affected by the Plan Condor or Operation Condor activity. You can Google that if you want to. You see, torture was commonplace back then. It was state-sponsored and U.S.-sponsored. The U.S., which means the CIA and so forth, trained, assisted, and recognized the governments of Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, Peru, and Uruguay, and their bloodthirsty military regimes in the name of combating the spread of international communism. Of course, back then, terrorists were all communists. In the country where I grew up, summary executions happened on a daily basis in the mid-70s. The security forces, so-called, would threaten arrestees with sticking them in a gas chamber if they did not, quote, confess to their crimes, end quote. Everyone laughed, for they were certain no gas chamber existed in the country. The laughter grew louder when they were tied to a chain which was screwed to the floor of a wooden shack without a roof. After all, what kind of a gas chamber has no roof? The laughter soon died as a propane tank, one of those metal jobs used in backyard barbecue grills, was hoisted up on a crane and dropped on the head of the occupant of the gas chamber. It was also routine all across the country in police stations and army barracks to stick people either in a potato sack or a metal drum with only their head sticking out. In the case of the drum, the lid had a hole in the center. The drum or sack would be put in the middle of a yard or parking lot. The prisoner would be fed and given drink. But as the individual was in the tight, cramped space, their knees, elbows, and other protuberances would rub themselves raw on the inside surface of the drum as the prisoner would eat and drink. But he was given no respite, and he or she would soon soil themselves and be forced to sit in their own filth. With heat came flies, with flies came maggots, the maggots would feed from the sores, indeed the prisoner was rotting alive. Later they would be either buried alive or thrown from an aircraft into the sea. In one particular country, soon after the military had deposed a freely elected government, the military rounded up all the homosexuals they could find in the capital, 3,000 of them. They were put on a ship about to be scrapped. They were towed out to sea and sunk by this country's navy. Being arrested on the streets for the simple offense of walking from your job to your house was commonplace, as was being beaten by the police. If you had any money, you could pay a fine and be let go. If your wife or girlfriend happened to be with you, groping her during the search process was a regular occurrence. If you both got arrested, she stood a good chance of being raped. The men were put in damp basement cells of 10 by 10 feet, 40 or 50, however many they could squeeze in. With no bathroom breaks, we would soil ourselves as we stood packed like sardines. The stench was unbearable. Sleep was impossible. There was no place to lay down. Cleanup time was a fire hose generally pointed into the cell, the water cold as ice, and then we stood shivering in soaked clothes for For more hours or days, depending on the mood of the police. There's more, and I want you to hear the rest of it. Stay with us.
Talk radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I'm sharing with you an email I got today from a guy who's using the name Bill, talking about torture in his country in South America when he lived there during the 70s. He has explained up to this point about some of the tactics used and why they were used. And then he writes, in my country, the entire top floor of the Central Police Department of the Capitol was occupied by the CIA. This was no rumor. This was fact. And they were there with the full consent of the U.S. government, for it was these governments who outwardly decried the human rights abuses, yet privately backed them to the hilt. Oh, it was the U.S. government who outwardly decried the human rights abuses of these governments, yet privately backed them to the hilt. The Army Intelligence Building in the Capitol was a foreboding building with a totalitarian oppressive design, whose multi-level basement occupied most of a city block. Some of the tunnels underneath it were wide enough to allow army trucks that would come and deliver the corpses of the so-called terrorists captured during the night. Even pregnant women were not spared. Some had been shot in the stomach. The fetus hung out as the body rotted and the rats nibbled on it. And yet, when I became an enemy of the system with a ragtag group of young people who had no idea of what we were doing, but were labeled as terrorists by the government, we and every guerrilla went out and used the same tactics as the government. Insanity begets insanity as a flame that feeds itself. When we learned of a police chief who had disappeared many citizens, was holding the daughters of the citizens he had murdered, none of us, or some of whom were as young as 8, feeding them drugs and selling them into prostitution, we did not hesitate, not one second, in imparting unto him some of the same torture and worse that he had subjected unto his victims. The reason I'm hesitating, because the sentences are, this is obviously, the English is not the man's first language. Mike, torture is not new. Neither is U.S.-sponsored torture. It's been happening for decades. Many generals in South America were West Point graduates. The armed forces were often trained by so-called advisors. Guerrillas were courted by both the CIA and the KGB. After all, there was money to be made in the sale of weapons. Now it's a big deal because it happened here, and the U.S. involvement is more direct, shall we say. But these crimes have been going on for a long time. I've been living in this country for almost 30 years now, longer than I've lived anywhere else, and yet I feel like I'm having deja vu and reliving a time which I thought was over. You were talking about leaving the United States, but where to go and how, with which resources? No, no, no. The battleground is here. Sincerely, Bill. You know, I was thinking today, Kathy and I and some friends took 3 of our daughters, Molly and Scarlett and Sophie, and they're all about the same age. They all go to the same preschool. And matter of fact, they all are the same age, right? Right? They're all almost 5, 4 and a half. We went to Dogwood Festival here in Atlanta today. at Piedmont Park, which is like Central Park in New York. And just hundreds of booths with artists and all sorts of stuff, potters, photographers, painters, weavers, and, you know, the usual festival food and the tables and lots of, I think we had, there were two big stages there with a lot of rock groups and jazz groups playing. And it was a beautiful day here in Atlanta today. When we were out at the park, it was like 72 degrees, beautiful, beautiful day. And God knows we've had some storms here in the past month. And as we're walking through the crowd, it's a three-day event. So the crowds today, when we were there, were not, you know, the usual wall-to-wall humanity, which it's the only downside of going to big festivals like that. It's just chock-a-block with people. So we're walking along, and I'm watching the kids, the three little girls, and they're climbing trees when they're not looking at art. Don't touch that, Molly. Sophie, put your hands down. Scarlett, you know, that sort of stuff. Went on all day. Don't touch it. You know, we, the parents, kept thinking, oh, Jesus, if they knock something off, there goes $80. So, but in watching the kids, it was kind of unbelievable. One of the women that was with us is a former producer at CNN. The other one is from Great Britain and has married to an American citizen and moved here years ago. The one who worked at CNN at one time, her husband is still a cameraman there and travels a lot for that particular work. And I mention that because all of us have kind of a worldview that's fairly similar. You know, we don't have to sit down and talk about the terrible things that we see. But through all of this today, you know, I kept thinking, is this a subject that I want to bring up again tonight? Is this something I want to talk about again tonight? And every time I looked at those three little girls, I thought, yeah, got to talk about this so that we maybe can try to do something to make sure it doesn't keep happening or something like that.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Usually on Friday, We try to maybe not be as dreadfully heavy in the topics and the attitude and the mood and so on and so forth during the rest of the week. I guess that's a holdover from back in the day when there were still things you could talk about on talk radio that were not brutally cold and scary and dark.
It's Earth Day tomorrow. Could we talk about, you know,
no,
butterflies or
no.
trees or
no. Earth
caterpillar.
Day.
Well, anytime now, anytime now I think about caterpillars, I think about the bugs put in a cage with Abu Zubaydah or whatever.
Earth Day is, we ought to play for Earth Day. Do you still have Requiem? What is that? That was, you remember the movie?
Requiem for Strings.
Requiem from Strings. Will you find that? So we can play a little bit later tonight. I love Requiem for Strings. It's really good.
That's Apocalypse Now. What the heck has that got to do?
No.
Oh,
no.
Platoon. What's that got to do with Earth Day?
Right. Because I, you know, Molly asked me tonight when I put her to bed, do people live longer than 150,000 years? She's at the age where, you know, they're all talking amongst themselves, these little children, about death and dying. And what it all means. It's kind of weird to listen to. But in going back to today, you know, watching these three little girls, right around 5 years old. I don't think any of the three are quite five. And watch them as they're playing in this huge Central Park-like venue here in Atlanta. Matter of fact, designed by the same guy, Olmsted. What was his first name? John Olmsted. I think it was John who designed Central Park. And all the art and all the music and, you know, the usual stuff you find, like jugglers and dancers and, no mimes. We have open season on mimes down here, but, the setting for all this was just, it's a perfect childhood thing. They got their faces painted and they got them painted with these psychedelic butterflies that were just, the artists sitting in the little tent places, really knew their business. I mean, these were beautiful, butterflies that all three of the kids got painted on their faces. And then of course, let me see. Look, where's the mirror? Let me have it, Daddy. Give me the mirror. I want the mirror. And just the whole fascination that these kids have. And of course, when you're walking through the park like that on a day like today, you can't help but, plug into that. And get a sense of what they're feeling. If you can remember, if you can go back far enough, back to that time in your own life when, you know, your family life might have been weird. All of us have had weird family lives. You know, I've shared a little bit about mine on this program. But those moments, and there, no matter how weird your family life was growing up, you may have had, abuse in your family or, drug addiction or alcoholism somewhere or unemployment or desperate times. And yeah, you know, but there were also those moments, right? When things clicked for you as a kid. And depending on your age, there really was, I know younger listeners find this hard to believe, but there really was a time when kids had unstructured, afternoons. Think about that for a moment. You know, there was really nothing to do, which meant there was everything to do. And your mind could take you any place that you wanted to go. And, you know, most 5 year olds have minds that go on for light years. You ever notice that? So, you know, watching these three little girls today, it just so much fun and watching them and a sense of, how they're processing all this. Will it stick in their head when they're in their 60s or 70s? If they're still alive, if they're still on earth, if there's still time to think and remember, will they remember days like today? And I think probably so. And then of course, I don't know if the moms did, but I started thinking, yeah, but, if they only knew what was really going on out here in the world beyond the reach of children. If they only knew what kids in, pick a country are suffering, you know, and of course it's our job not to let them see those pictures, not to let them know, not to let them, get the full force, not that they could even handle it, but can you imagine showing a 5-year-old American kid a picture of a 5-year-old Palestinian child blown to pieces? No, of course not. I don't know how a 5-year-old American kid would handle that. Or a 5-year-old Israeli kid. You know, it doesn't make any difference what, blown to pieces. It doesn't make any difference who is doing the dying. To have children have to deal with that. To know the knowledge, sure, the death, the maiming, the horror in so much of the world. But in so much of the world, there's not horror. I'm sure there are places all over the planet where little kids are going out to festivals today and with their parents or at least one parent. And their focus is on getting their faces painted or bouncing on a huge trampoline or, looking at art, knowing that mom and dad are back there saying, don't touch! Or climbing a tree. All the things that these little girls do. And little girls are little girls, right? Wherever they are. We have some people who have moved in not far from where we live, a Muslim family, and there's like five kids, two little boys, three little girls. And the boys go outside and shoot basketball, and the girls come out and they ride their scooters, but they have to dress in a certain way. They have to wear the scarf and the long clothing. And I saw them all out on the street walking through the neighborhood the other day, and, you know, I said, hey, listen, be careful when you're on the street because, cars come through here pretty fast, even though we have it posted that it's only 25 mile an hour speed limit. And the kids, you know, thank me. Thank you, sir. Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you. And there they were, you know, having a good time, having one of those moments of just being a kid, you know, just being a kid. So thinking about that today and watching Molly and Scarlett and Sophie having such a good time, just, you know, locked into their world, completely locked into their world. It's surprises me that they even hear a parent say, come here. Here, are you hungry? Come over here. Come on, get something to drink. Come on. You know, it's amazing that they hear anything because they are just so locked into their little kid world. So then, you know, on the way, the way out to the Malloy compound, we're thinking about what do you want to do with the program tonight? And, you know, to make that shift from pure, unbridled life, that's what these little girls are. They're just, it's just life, you know, just pew. And all the stuff that they can come up with to define it. It's amazing to go from that to talking about the fact that the United States scoops people up or buys people from tribes, tribal leaders in Afghanistan who say, this is a terrorist. Oh, really? How much you want for him? How much you got? You know, and then we bring those people here or take them to other places and we torture them. And I know the story's been out there now for two news cycles, the release of the memos. So it's time to move on. It's time to find some other horror to, to talk about or not. Nobody says you have to talk about horrible stuff when you do talk radio. But I don't know. There's something about the nature of, talk radio that kind of precludes talking about fun stuff like, you know, three little girls hanging out at an art festival, you know, climbing a tree. Well, anyway, we're going to take a lot of phone calls tonight, I hope. Kathy's going to open up the phones at the top of this hour and give you a chance to talk about whatever. Oh, by the way, Earth Day is Wednesday the 22nd. It's not tomorrow.
Okay, it's like Earth Day weekend. And people are celebrating this. I mean, they're
wait a
festivals.
Minute, wait a minute. The Earth Day weekend goes to Wednesday? That's a long...
It's a big planet.
It's a big planet. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. No more weirdness. You know, just get off on weird, happy stuff. And, you know, that's not allowed. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That you can live by and so become yourself because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well their father's hell. It slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they pick, the one you know by. We'll be right back.
to the Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Have you heard about what Pat Robertson has to say? I don't know why I bring up Pat Robertson. I guess just for the absolute extremist geek and freak value from this Christian. It's unbelievable stuff. As Think Progress reports it, the past few days, the right wing has been going after this Department of Homeland Security report warning that right wing extremists may be gaining new recruits because of Barack Obama's election and the economic meltdown or downturn, so on and so forth. These are reports that were commissioned. There was one issued in January about left-wing extremists, and this one came out about right-wing. These are reports commissioned by George W. Bush. Now, a lot of conservatives, right-wingers, Republicans, doing what they always do, have been claiming that this is an attack on veterans. These goddamn, oh, I hate these people. Others have declared it was a politically motivated attempt to smear conservatives and their tea parties. The right wingers, Republicans, the conservatives, they truly are not human. They just aren't. I don't know what they are. They look human, they smell human, but they are not human. Either that, or they are a branch of Homo sapiens that forget the sapiens, but they're just so eaten away in their minds. It's incredible. Somebody releases a report about left-wing extremism. Nobody says anything. People on the left read it and go, really? Oh, okay. A couple of months later, they release about right-wing extremism. Whoa! Oh! God damn! Oh! 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 It's politically motivated! Oh! Oh! They're attacking veterans! Oh! They don't want us to have tea parties! Whoa! 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 Well, TV evangelist Pat Robertson went even further on his little masturbatory gathering on television every day on the 700 Club, I guess it was yesterday. Not only did he echo the belief that the report was produced by liberal Department of Homeland Security officials. Why, of course. Yeah. We have the liberal ones over here, and the conservative ones are the ones that put out the liberal report back in January. Yeah, Pat, that's right. Are the bugs bothering you yet, Pat? Oh, my goodness. He also claimed, get this, that their, quote, sexual orientation is somewhat in question, end quote. The liberals who produced this, their sexual orientation is somewhat in question. Now, he didn't elaborate, but here's a direct quote. It shows somebody down in the bowels of that organization, Department of Homeland Security, is either a convinced left-winger or somebody whose sexual orientation is somewhat in question. But it's that kind of thing. Somebody who doesn't think that we should have abortion on demand is labeled a terrorist. It's outrageous. No, you dumb son of a bitch. It's somebody who picks up a gun and shoots a doctor and murders him because the doctor respects a woman's right to choose a procedure in the privacy of her own mind, you freak. That's called terrorism, Pat. It's also called murder, and you promote it. Oh, calm down, Mike. I can't go from a day in the park to this. No, 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 no. Now, as this is at Think Progress, but Crooks and Liars also points out that Pat Robertson, has now urged his viewers to, his words, jam up the Homeland Security phone lines by calling in to complain. Do you understand? This is a full-scale assault. This country is going to erupt into some kind of a armed confrontation between different factions. It's coming as surely as Pat Robertson's God made little green apples. Oh, I guess that means it's not coming. But this is what they're pushing for. I think Robertson wants to bring on Armageddon so that Jesus will smile about all the blood and corpses and slip and slide his way down the huge pile of dead bodies and rescue Pat and all of his asinine followers. And the thugs on right-wing radio and television, I don't know what they get out of it. Maybe just sport. Now, remember that Pat Robertson is the man who's criticizing the notion that there are any right-wing extremists. He has called for the assassination of the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. Right? How many times have you heard somebody in this country who is on the Democratic left, which is not very far left anymore, other than me, calling for the assassination of anybody? And the only thing I've called for the assassination of is the Republican Party. I think it should be taken to a field and stabbed to death. Or no, not that at all. I think it should be taken to a field, wrapped up in cardboard with its appendages sticking out, and forced to stay there while it excretes all over itself, and then the bugs come. That would be good. So Robertson, this is a guy, Pat Robertson, he's a Christian, right? He's a follower of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right? The one who talked about peace and love and turning the other cheek and yada, 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 all this horse hockey that apparently Jesus Christ never said, or people like Pat Robertson wouldn't say would have a different song and dance. But Pat Robertson, who advocates murder, you would think that he would read the report and scream bloody murder, that his Christian nation is taking other human beings and torturing them. You'd think that, wouldn't you? If Pat Robertson were a real Christian, or if Christianity were a real religion, neither of which is true. It's mind control, the latter, and a psychopath, the former. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.com, which is probably the most important web site on the net, was talking about how Bush's tortured legal logic won. And he points out something we were talking about the other night, that as disturbing as reading these memos are about the Bush crime family's approved menu of in torture techniques, almost as disturbing is recognizing how Bush successfully shopped for government attorneys willing to take American law and make it meaningless. I mean, it's astonishing to me. Do not attorneys have something similar to the Hippocratic Oath about upholding the law? Aren't federal attorneys, the ones that work for the Justice Department, aren't they required to take oaths about this and swear about that? And yet the Bush crime family, of course, like attracts like. I mean, the Bush crime family, being the slimy sons of bitches that they are, it probably wasn't very difficult finding a law professor and a now judge to gut and destroy 230 years of American law. I mean, it's really kind of astonishing. As Perry says, the four torture memos released yesterday revealed not just that the stomach-turning reports about CIA interrogation abusing war on terror suspects were true, but that we have gone from being a nation of laws to a nation of legal sophistry, where conclusions on law are politically preordained and the legal analysis is made to fit. Now, you remember, do you remember the famous Downing Street memos where the British diplomat who sat in on discussions about how the U.S. and the U.K. were going to handle the invasion of Iraq? And remember what came out of that memo talked about how the Bush crime family decided that they had to make everything fit. It had to be made up and made to fit into their scenario. There was no reason to attack Iraq. None. Not even back in 91. Absolutely no reason. But because they're Bushes, because they are part of this multi-generational crime syndicate, and because we, you and I, allowed an unelected dumb ass to take over the country, they invaded for a second time, and the slaughter continued. There's a passage in the May 10th, 2005 memo, the one written by Stephen Bradbury, who was then acting head of the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. Now think about it for a second. Justice Department that provides us with an attorney general, the highest law enforcement officer in the country. And there is something within the Justice Department, the Office of Legal Counsel, which is there specifically, not exclusively, but specifically to make sure that all the attorneys working for the Justice Department are working within the law. And what does Stephen Bradbury and John Yoo, 3 years before him, what's his name? The guy that's now the judge. What did they do? What did they do? Well, here, let me read this to you. This is from Stephen Bradbury. Quote, "Another question is whether the requirement of prolonged mental harm caused by or resulting from one of the enumerated predicate acts is a separate requirement, or whether such prolonged mental harm is to be presumed any time one of the predicate acts occurs," end quote. I mean, if you can read that and not get this disorienting sense that any ambiguity in words can be twisted to justify almost anything, then you must be a Republican. It's astonishing stuff. I spent some more time last night after the show reading further into these memos, and I've never read anything like this. As I read this, I thought, you know, this is in English. Granted, it's tortured legalese written by neo-Nazi attorneys, but it's still in English. It's still readable and fairly understandable. The words are understandable. The kind of logic or rationale that they're using is just so bizarre. It's right up there with Pat Robertson saying that there must be a queer someplace in the Department of Homeland Security who's writing this stuff. That would be Pat Robertson's response when he's not calling for the assassination of democratically elected heads of state who might prevent Pat Robertson from making more money from his oil company. I mean, this is sick. This is so sick. And this guy claims to be a Christian. This sanctimonious son of a bitch who sits there on television every day and doing this prayer thing. Who are you praying to? Who are you praying to, Pat? Your wallet? Some whore you got tucked away someplace? No offense to sex workers. Thug. Bastard. Anyway. Ambiguity in words can be twisted to justify almost anything. Some of the tactics were bizarre, like feeding detainees a liquid diet of Ensure to make, quote, other techniques such as sleep deprivation more effective, end quote. Now, the memo sleep deprivation clause, in turn, allowed interrogators to shackle prisoners to an overhead pipe for up to 180 hours. That's more than a week. Shackled to an overhead pipe. This is what we do. While shackled, the prisoner would be dressed in a diaper that is, quote, checked regularly and changed as necessary, end quote. Well, obviously, if he's shackled for 7.5 days, he's going to soil himself. So you put a diaper on him. Now, the memo asserted, listen to this. The memo said, quote, the use of the diaper is for sanitary and health purposes of the detainee. It is not used for the purpose of humiliating the detainee, and it is not considered to be an interrogation technique. End quote. This Jay Bybee, this sick son of a bitch, and this guy Stephen Bradbury, sick man, and John Yoo, a professor of law at USC Berkeley. Good God! These are the kind of people who have gotten into position. When you add the pig man, Limbaugh, and this Christian murderer, Pat Robertson, take a look. Every place you look in this country where the right has influence, it is poison. It is death. It is anti-life. It is absolute poison. They'll do anything to save a zygote, a blastocyst. Because it's part of their theory of busting the hell out of women. Shut up, bitch, and sit down. It's the same thing as the Taliban. Exactly the same thing. The Christian Reconstruction Movement, which is the reason I carry a gun. The Christian Reconstruction Movement believes exactly as the Taliban, only they use a different book of superstition. And these people present themselves as followers of the risen Christ. A diaper, while you're chained from an overhead pipe, a diaper will be put on you and will be checked regularly and changed as necessary. The use of the diaper is for sanitary and health reasons, not for the purpose of humiliating the detainee. I mean, can you understand that Americans wrote that? American lawyers who had to have gone to law school somewhere, who had to have taken an oath when they joined the Justice Department. We'll be right back. Against the law, I am perfectly comfortable fighting the world. If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly happy if it happened to them? If you're perfectly comfortable, come into.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Here's the oath Minnesota attorneys take when they are sworn into the bar. All the states have a similar oath. Here it is. Quote, you do swear that you, this is said to the attorneys who are being sworn in. You do swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and that of the state of Minnesota and will conduct yourself as an attorney and counselor at law in an upright and courteous manner to the best of your learning and ability with all good fidelity as well to the court as to the client. And that you will use no falsehoods or deceit nor delay any person's cause for lucre or malice. So help you God. Wow. That was written about 1,000 years ago, huh? Back to Robert Perry. He said, beyond the painful disorientation from depriving a person of sleep while chained in a standing position for days, the Justice Department memos called for prisoners to be forced into other stress positions for varying periods of time to cause, quote, the physical discomfort associated with muscle fatigue, end quote. Uh-huh. So being hung from an overhead pipe by your wrists for 7.5 days, they refer to that as muscle fatigue. Muscle fatigue. And then there were the various slaps and grabs and slamming a prisoner against a wall while his neck was in a sling to, quote, help prevent whiplash. Huh? And then there was water dousing, in which a detainee is sprayed with water that can be as cold as 41 degrees Fahrenheit for up to 20 minutes. 41 degrees Fahrenheit. You know what the temperature inside your refrigerator right now is? Probably about 37 or 38 degrees. Oh, and you could go for longer periods of a time if the water was raised to maybe 43 or 44 degrees. Okay. I mean, what kind of a mind puts this stuff together? Did they have some goddamn Mengele standing in the background saying, well, the prisoner can accept this much stress and pain and terror? Now, keep in mind, these were not convicted terrorists. These were people swept up someplace in some godforsaken mountain country and handed over to CIA. Here, would you like some more suspects? Yeah, give them to me. How much? How much you got on you? God damn. And am I saying goddamn a lot tonight? Yes. Yes. Listen to this language. You know, people jump on me about my language. What about this language?
The interrogator may cup his hands around the detainee's nose and mouth to dam the runoff during waterboarding, in which case it would not be possible for the detainee to breathe during the application of the water. In addition, you have informed us that the technique may be applied in a manner to defeat efforts by the detainee to hold his breath by, for example, beginning an application of water as the detainee is exhaling, end quote. And you people have the nerve to send me emails when I say goddamn about that language? And these are the highest legal officers in the United States writing that?
The interrogators also were authorized to prevent a detainee from trying to, quote, defeat the technique of partial drowning or waterboarding. And how would they do that? They would thrash around or try to breathe from the corner of their mouths. Well, Jay Bybee, who is now a federal judge, and John Yoo, who is an English or a law professor, and Stephen Bradbury, who is, I don't know, I hope he is burning in hell someplace. These people figured out a way to stop the detainee from sucking in a little air from the side of his mouth. Cup your hands around the detainee's nose and mouth.
Since the Spanish Inquisition, this has been regarded as torture for 500 years. It's been regarded as torture. The U.S. government prosecuted Japanese soldiers who used it against American troops in World War II. But the legal reasoning of the Bush administration's memos transformed waterboarding, partial drowning, into an acceptable method of interrogation.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. And remember, the statistics on how long a person can endure cold water were compiled in the Nazi death camps. That was one of the many experiments. And if you Google Nazi death camps or torture, Nazi whatever, there are old films that have been digitized that are out there on the internet. You can one of the ones I saw was a man, skinny, obviously he was in a death camp, placed in a huge vat of icy cold water, and you can watch his agitation and fear. If you're so inclined. But Prairie 2 writes, the statistics on how long a person can endure cold water were compiled in the Nazi death camps. No better numbers are available since no other study has been willing to kill the participants. It is possible that Judge Bivey was using the more up-to-date Dick Cheney tables. Now, just a little more on this. In releasing, with Robert Perry at Consortium News, .com, in releasing the four memos yesterday, President Obama and Attorney General Holder repeated their rejection of the Bybee U. Bradbury legal theories. Yeah, they did. But they also stipulated that they would oppose any legal action against the CIA interrogators who abused detainees under the Bush administration's legal guidance. Neither Obama nor Holder spoke specifically about possible legal accountability for Bush's lawyers, the ones who authored these memos, or for Bush and his top aides who oversaw the torture policies and picked the lawyers. However, Obama recommends a focus on the future, not the past, calling the period covered by the four memos, quote, a dark and painful chapter in our history. Obama added that, quote, nothing will be gained by spending our time and energy laying blame for the past, end quote. What? As Perry points out, the lack of accountability for Bush and his lawyers may mean that future presidents will follow Bush's lead and assign some clever legal wordsmiths the job of finding ways around criminal statutes, international treaties, and the U.S. Constitution. If legal language can be interpreted any way that a president wishes, and if the U.S. Supreme Court is stocked with like-minded judges, then laws will no longer protect anyone, whether a suspected Middle Eastern terrorist or an American citizen. So President Obama and Eric Holder have decided, well, you know, the most criticism-worthy act that Obama engaged in yesterday was to affirm and perpetuate what is the single most destructive premise in our political culture. Namely, that when high government officials get caught committing serious crimes, the responsible and constructive thing to do is demand immunity for them, while only those who are vindictive and divisive want political leaders to be held accountable for their crimes. This is what Obama said in affirming that rotten premise. That's what Glenn Greenwald said, that paragraph. This is what Obama said. This is a time for reflection, not retribution. But at a time of great challenges and disturbing disunity, nothing will be gained by spending our time and energy laying blame for the past. Our national greatness is embedded in America's ability to right its course in concert with our core values and to move forward with confidence. That is why we must resist the forces that divide us and instead come together on behalf of our common future, end quote. What? As Greenwald points out, that passage, more than anything else, what he just said there, is the mindset that has destroyed the rule of law in the United States and spawned massive criminality in our elite classes. Accountability for crimes committed by political leaders, as opposed to ordinary Americans, is scorned as retribution and laying blame for the past. Those who believe that the rule of law should be applied to the powerful as well as to ordinary citizens are demonized as the forces that divide us, according to President Obama. The bottomless corruption of immunized political elites for serious crimes is glorified in the most Orwellian terms as a time for reflection, moving forward, coming together on behalf of our common future. Go rob a bank. And when the police try to arrest you, just tell them, hey, I was just making an extra legal withdrawal. What's the problem? That's how the media and the Democratic leaders constantly talked about Bush's illegal spying on Americans. What he did was never a crime or even illegal. At worst, it was, well, you know, he was engaged in eavesdropping and circumvention of the FISA framework. That's all. That works, too, if they want to rob a bank. I was just making withdrawal and circumvention of the banking regulatory framework. Oh. There needs to be a special prosecutor. Or not, if the United States of America is going to continue on the path toward freedom, justice, equality, all under the law. Freedom under the law, justice under the law, equality under the law. If we're going to pursue that path, then a special prosecutor has to be appointed where it concerns the crimes committed by the Bush administration. If no special prosecutor is appointed, if no congressional hearings are held, with subpoena power and under oath. Some of these wimpy-ass Democrats are talking about, well, you know, we're going to grant immunity so people can speak freely. Son of a bitch. Really? Is that how it's going to work, Mr. Leahy? Grant immunity? Isn't that what Oliver North got when Oliver North sat there and talked about the slaughter of innocents in Central America? Immunity, so he couldn't be prosecuted. We are chock-a-block with mass murderers, and they're not on the campuses of universities. They're in the upper levels of our government. And they're also roaming the countryside now, having just been in the upper levels of our government. And what are we going to do about it? Well, Chuck from Colorado says, Mike, you and some of your viewers, I think he means listeners, need to chill out about the apparent slow progress in investigating and bringing to justice the members of the Bush team that authorized torture. We all want to see the Bush crime family brought to justice. However, we need to have patience. Let the process slowly grind away. I think Obama was very clever when he released the torture memos. He gave legal evidence to the entire world that they can now use to bring legal action. He can now sit back and not have to take any immediate actions that could be politically disastrous. He can focus on the economy and let Spain or some other country who has signed the Geneva Convention use these documents. If any country finds the Bush crime family guilty of violating international law, anyone connected with the Bush team will become prisoners within our borders. How humiliating for this group to be under so-called house arrest. Before anyone can complain, they should ask themselves, what would John McCain do if he was president? Calm down and let the process slowly proceed. Time wounds all heals. It will turn out just fine. Chuck from Colorado. Well, I don't think you can call someone who authorizes torture a heel. I mean, that's a very quaint term, Chuck, and it's, you know, left over from what, the 30s, I think. My mother used to use that term. He's a real heel. That's how my mother used to use it. I don't think somebody who says, well, when you string them up from an overhead pipe for 7.5 days, be sure to put a diaper on them because, you know, they're going to be crapping all over themselves and peeing, and the stink is going to be really bad. So now this is not to embarrass them, but it's for their own sanitation and health. So what we want you to do is put a diaper on them. And then when the bugs come around, you know, you got to figure out a way to handle the bugs. If they get into the open sores and start eating, then of course you got a problem. But I don't know. I think we can work this out. I'm underneath the streetlight, the delight of joy I know. Scared beyond belief, way down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Right after the break, the top of the hour, we're going to open up the lines and take some calls from you. Bob writes in, we should not focus on the past. As Obama says, because that's where every single crime ever committed happened. We should focus on the future because no crimes have been committed there yet. Obama's an optimist, always looking forward to where nothing bad has happened yet. This guy taught constitutional law for how many years? And then there's this from Ron, who's still lost in PA. Hey, Mike, this is getting very real, but is it real enough to wake the pathologically self-involved masses who have had their compassion free-marketed out of them, who've had the love of their neighbors dulled by consumer goods to the point that they've all become little better than dogs growling over our food bowls with anyone when anyone approaches us or asks for help? Come on, Mike. Your employing for reason is why I show up every night after night. Yet, as I've written to you time and time again, asking the question, when will it be enough? What will it take for the people to rise up to tell this president and his cabinet, hell no? Well, I don't even know what to speculate on that anymore. We just don't give a damn. That's clear. We're so cut off from reality and from each other that we truly live provisional lives of Thoreauian quiet desperation. We are a people bereft of meaning beyond the relevance claimed on the corporate news cycle. And like the Eloi, we respond automatically without true depth or genuine emotion. And so it goes as we are operantly conditioned out of our humanity. And that's why our politicians prey on our weak sentiments by telling us what we want to hear so they can just go ahead and do what they want to do. They laugh in our faces because they know we won't do squat. We're not a courageous people. We wouldn't give up our iPods for the sake of liberty, let alone our lives. So what do we get from this new era of openness? The same old, like you suspected it would be. We gave him our trust like a bunch of idiots. So meet the new boss, yada yada, and yeah, we did get fooled again. I don't mean to gloat, but I've always suspected that Obama had a bit of the Willie Loman in him. Even as far back as his rousing speech at the Democratic Convention in 2004, I didn't feel he was being absolutely upfront. For despite his seeming deprivations, he's still a yuppie, a yuppie offspring, and the only person he's in it for is himself, and no one can tell me otherwise. I thought he was a phony somewhat during the election, but after 8 years of Bush and 30 years of Reaganomics, I was willing to let down my guard and believe in the process, that it could again work for us. I was ready to be done with the anxiety that that dark part of our recent past had produced, and I did hope sanity could return to the U.S., but boy, was I a sucker. And after the wiretapping retreat, in his about-face on torture, Obama can go ahead and insist on, quote, moving forward, end quote, but at least on my end, the gloves are off, and I want to make him do the will of the people who got him elected, however that rolls out, because I'm not teabagging for anybody. And just like you, I've got a six-year-old, and I'm worried about what kind of a world he'll inherit. And if I do nothing to ensure that he doesn't have to live in hell, then what kind of a father am I? Yeah, that's got to be a question on the minds of that last bit there that Ron wrote. It's got to be a question on the minds of everybody who has young kids. I can't remember when my next youngest up is 30. I can't remember when I started telling Chris about what the real world consisted of. I don't remember when my parents did. I don't know. I don't remember. I know the first time I realized that humanity was something to be deeply and desperately feared was the first time I mentioned this before, the first time I saw or found out about the death camps in Germany and Poland, where the Jews were, the attempt was made to annihilate them. I mean, I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that something like that really happened, by people who, in a nation who had produced the kind of musicians and thinkers and writers and creative geniuses as Germany, and Austria. And, it was shocking. It was shocking. And I just never stopped, never went back. You can't go back into believing that there is redemption. The only thing I think that we can do is to realize that, okay, I've got to take care, of my children. I have to take care of the people, in my family, the people that I love, and they have got to take care of me, and I will try to reach out to other people. I'll try to, use some U2 lyrics about opening up your arms to embrace the world and so on and so on and so on and so on. But, the truth is that, that's kind of an impossibility because, you know, everybody has to be in that same mindset, right? Everybody has to think about, you know, opening up, a lot of these right wingers, when they open up their arms, all you find in there are guns and bullet belts and hand grenades strapped to their bodies and Klan helmets and Nazi flags. Oh, Lord have mercy. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and take some calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy.
into the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It is about 7 minutes past the hour. We're going to take some of your phone calls now, if you'd like to do that. All right. We're talking, first to Steve, who's listening on KTNF in Minneapolis. Hey, Steve.
Hi. Here's what the thing about prosecution of the torturers, the war criminals. It seems, sir, I'm sure that Barack Obama is, how do you say it, putting the brakes on it, opposing it,
right,
trying to delay it. And I've heard it said that the United States is required by treaty and by international law to investigate war crimes.
Uh-huh.
Now, I suggest, I wrote to my Congressman Keith Ellison today, sent off a paper letter, which I hope somebody notices, that if Barack Obama is preventing the Justice Department from investigating and prosecuting these war crimes, which they are certainly probable cause,
right,
he's guilty of obstruction of justice. And I want the House of Representatives, if he does this, if he continues on this path, to impeach him and for the Senate to try him and take him out of office. The war crimes are not trivial. And it is imperative that they not be let off the hook. I don't want to see any low-level operative do time. I would like to see them, you know, the following orders defense was discredited at Nuremberg correctly. Mm-hmm. But I want to see the upper-level people who ordered it and who understand the law. I would love to see them do time. But I want the United States to pursue it.
Well, let me ask you, starting 2 years ago, the Democratic Party-controlled U.S. House of Representatives did not find reason or courage to begin impeachment proceedings against George W. Bush, who did all this stuff. Yeah, Obama, you can make a case that he might be guilty of obstruction. But let's back up a little bit to the actual crimes that were committed. You know, who is more guilty, the person who murders someone or the person who, when the cops comes by, says, yeah, I think he ran down the street to the left when actually the guy ran down the street to the right? Well, obviously, the one who did the killing is more responsible. Right. But wait a second. If the Democrats did not have the courage or the desire or respect for the Constitution to impeach George W. Bush, what in the world makes you think that a Democratic controlled Congress would impeach their own president?
They would never.
No,
it'll never happen.
Never happen.
Never happen. But I heard the argument on the radio today, which was interesting. I don't agree with it, but saying that, well, Barack Obama is trying to get public support and get the push and the backing that he needs to go ahead with this. Yeah, and I wish I could believe that were true. And the Democrats were reprehensible in not having the courage 2 years ago or 4 years ago. I voted for Obama reluctantly, and I never thought that he was very particularly liberal. I agree with
right.
you. I would have loved to see Kucinich. And no, I mean, there might be a few people, a few Democrats that I like, but most of them are really not very courageous, and you're right. No, they'll never do it. But there's still, I want people to speak up and say, this is, letting these people off is wrong. And
well, I had one emailer tonight, Steve, and thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. I had one emailer tonight who suggested that Obama is making a very good tactical move. And I don't completely disagree with what the emailer said. The tactical move being that if Obama goes straight ahead against the Bush crime family, you know, we live in a real world. We live in the United States of America in the year 2009. There are people out here with an awful lot of guns, an awful lot of rage, and an awful lot of stupidity. And when you put the three of those together, nobody's really safe. So Obama goes head up against this massive criminal enterprise that was the Bush crime family. Massive criminal enterprise that has its roots in everything, in business, the U.S. military, the intelligence agencies, the House, the Senate, the governor's offices, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. You understand what I'm saying? The Secret Service. Trying to protect him would be a complete impossibility. John Kennedy made the same mistake after he was elected. He went after the wrong people. And this is my opinion. I mean, this is not what the Warren Commission said, but this is my opinion. And because he went after the wrong people, even though he had been warned not to go after the wrong people, he was murdered. And some poor chump or a couple of poor chumps took the fall for that assassination. But, excuse me, in the case of the Kennedy assassination, it was a former Marine, Lee Harvey Oswald, who took the fall. The point to all this, I think what the emailer was trying to say, look, Malloy, he did the best thing he could do. He released the memos. So now, it's not just speculation on the part of people who believe in constitutional law. It's not speculation on the part of people who still respect our country, whether they live here or live outside our country. It's no longer rumor and innuendo that pig bastards like Dick Cheney can deny ever happened. Now it's out there. And now the American public and the global public can see one of the qualifications to becoming a federal appeals court judge in this country is to be willing to write the kinds of garbage that was in those memos that would justify violations of the law on a global scale. And that would be Jay Bybee, who is now a federal appeals court judge. And that our educational system in this country, our higher educational system, is so pimped and prostituted and destroyed that the University of University of California, Berkeley, for Christ's sake, keeps on its tenured payroll this thug John Yoo. So the whole world now can see, and 300 million Americans, those that give a damn, can see. Everybody can see what they did. And again, these are not classified documents. These are just how the law was perverted to allow God knows what to go on. We don't have, I bet you we don't have 1% of what was done to people that we swept up over the last 8 years. 1% of the information. There is no mention of anywhere that you or I will ever find of the 200 people that were murdered while they were in detention, some of whom were roasted, cooked, inside shipping containers in Afghanistan. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So, again, what my emailer suggested was maybe Obama did the only thing he could do. He released everything. And now it's up to the House, the Senate, the military, the people, the intelligence agencies, I don't know, the National Bar Association, the judicial review that takes a look at people who sit on federal benches in this country. Barack Obama is one guy. He's one man over here, and over there are the forces of imperialistic, capitalistic corporate America daring him to make a move.
Talk.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Twenty-one past the hour. Big Man writes, what now? The emperor has no clothes. America has been unmasked, and we are no better than those we castigate. Is there a shadow government, and is all hope lost? For God's sake, what do I tell my daughter? I don't know. You know, you stop and think. Supposing Barack Obama were president, and there had been no 8 years of Bush and the crimes that Bush committed. Supposing Bush just would have been in the office of the presidency as part of the family tradition, and he would have kind of pissed away the last 8 years, much the way that Eisenhower did, without the Korean War, of course. But was that Truman. I guess Truman was still in office. Eisenhower was 52 to 60. And yeah, I know. Don't start it on me. I know Eisenhower had his military adventures too. But let's supposing Bush would have been just a low level punk in his policies. He is a low level punk. But let's supposing that he wouldn't have put around him, or Dick Cheney wouldn't have put around him, Dick Cheney and all the other people that Dick Cheney put around him. Blah blah blah. Barack Obama comes along and becomes the first African American president. Has this a great family, articulate. Oh my God, is he articulate and intelligent, so on and so on and so on. And started doing all the things that he has done so far. I mean, except for this cancer, that all of which was started by Bush. Barack Obama right now would be considered a just the best president we've had since Kennedy. I don't know. Maybe Roosevelt. I don't know. But what we're dealing with, I think what the struggle here is that you and I and people who are trying desperately to retain some ability to think and reason and logic about where we are and where we're going as a country, what we're stuck with is this enormous, this tidal wave of stuff that George W. Bush and his crime family dumped on this country. Now, I fluctuate from one moment thinking, come on, Obama, you know, what do you mean you're going to not prosecute? To the other side, which is Jesus, I understand why he doesn't. He's got two young daughters. He doesn't want to be shot down in the street. So what do we want in a president? I guess is what we're getting down to here. Yeah, I would have loved to have had a liberal progressive. How long would Kucinich have lasted? How long would Nader have lasted? I don't know anymore. I really don't. There is an enormous heap of crazy, psychopathic, so-called Christian, right-wing, skinhead, nutball, Klan, Confederate, goddamn sick people in this country. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of them. They're motivated daily by their ilk on radio and television. Who wants to step up into the office of the presidency and take these cockroaches on? Who wants to do it? Who wants to do it? I don't. Do you? So we get Barack Obama. And what next? I mean, what is it that we want him to do? After 8 years of destruction of the rule of law by how many different factions went into destroying the country? Wall Street? Bankers? Certain aspects of the military? Media, the Christian propagandists. I mean, how far do you want to go? Take a look. The Bush crime family did not operate in a vacuum. They had the support and suckling of every extremist group, from religion to business to murderous capitalists who have no problem with invading other countries, no problem with refusing to pay decent taxes. I mean, just on and on and on. So in comes Barack Obama. What do you want him to do? Do you want him to, like I do, assign a special prosecutor? Are we ready to accept responsibility for his assassination? What do you want to do? I don't know what I'm not asking you as a challenge. I'm asking you out of curiosity. I have no idea what I want him to do. On so many levels, he appears to be trying up against 30 years, maybe 50 years of absolute intransigent madness in this country. He's trying, whether it is with Cuba or Iran or our financial system or our environmental chaos. I mean, he's trying. What can one 47-year-old man do? What do we want him to do? I don't have an answer. Do you?
To listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Quick email here and then back to your phone calls. This is from John. Mike, love your show. Listen whenever I can. I just heard you speaking to Jerry Falwell and had to drop you a line about these folks. First off, I'm a Christian, a fully devoted follower of Jesus, and I'm as far on the left as you are. The Falwells, Robertsons, Warrens, and Dobsons of the world, by so aligning themselves with the Republican Party, have done more damage to Christianity and the message of Christ than they could possibly imagine. It makes me profoundly sad whenever these people open their mouths. The damage is done, and it will take generations for Christianity to recover. I attend a megachurch here in Chicago's suburbs that I think you would actually approve of. The senior pastor was spiritual advisor to President Clinton, and after listening to this man preach for the past 15 years, I can tell you he's a Democrat. Politics are never spoken of directly in this church, but he has been critical of the Iraq War, President Bush, and was very excited about the election and inauguration of President Obama. The other reason is this church differs from the other mega churches is that this senior pastor put a board of directors above him, and they decide his salary. He did this knowing the power that money has over people and how it can corrupt. He even donates all of his book profits back into the church. I've seen his house, and it's smaller than mine. I just wanted to let you know that this is out there, and it's not all bad. Keep up the work, John. I don't deny that there are people who are practicing Christians or practicing Muslims or practicing Jews who do wonderful, wonderful things. But my contention is and remains and always will be that they would do equally that kind of good if they were coming at whatever they're coming at from a secular standpoint. Religion is unnecessary in terms of doing well or doing good. It just is. I'm not going to get deeply into all that. I've said it so many times in this program, but and I clearly understand the distinction between these preachers and televangelists who are murdering Christianity, just murdering it, just killing it. But before they kill it, they're making the adherents to it absolutely insane. They're making them crazy with hatred and lust. You know, these mega churches, they preach hatred against gay folk. I don't care how they try to couch through. Every time I hear Rick Warren say, well, I'm not really anti-homosexual. Yes, you are. Completely and totally down to the core of your being. And the proof of that is you would deny them. You would deny them legal rights in this country. Don't kid yourself. Rick Warren is as much a fascist as Billy Graham ever was. So it just goes on and on and on. You know, these people who represent Christianity, who get all the play, are evil. As far as I'm concerned, there is no they're evil, just plain evil. There are people out there who claim to be Christians who are doing good things, but again, I maintain that they would do equally these good things, maybe to a greater degree, if they were coming at them from a strictly secular point of view. But I do know that there is a distinction, and in some of these folks, a massive distinction. And I appreciate what you wrote, John. I really do. I used to be like you. I really did. Not overtly. You know, I wasn't ready to take up my cross and follow Jesus, which is what he commanded. But you know, I thought, okay, it's a moral framework within which people can operate. But when I started to look at that moral framework, I realized that it was corrupt, immoral, untruthful, fantasy, superstitious, and ultimately a complete perversion. All religion, not just Christianity, John. All religion, a complete perversion of truth and light and justice and honesty. Sorry, we just massively disagree. But thanks for writing. Hussein is calling from Minneapolis, also listening on KTNF tonight. Hussein, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm a long listener of your program. I must say it is a source of sanity and fresh air on a daily basis.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, so anyway, I got a couple of things.
Go ahead.
Number one, to begin with, Obama, with respect to the torture team, I am not clear whether he is saying he's not going to prosecute the low-lying or the low-office CIA officers who were allegedly involved in the
right
in the torturing practice, versus whether he's saying he's not going to prosecute, period, of anybody who could be accused, including the vice president or the president himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not clear to me which position he's taking it.
Well, what he's saying, he's using a defense of these people, and Obama's a smart man. I'm sure he understands this. He's using a defense of these people, the torturers, that was negated, declared nonsense at Nuremberg, and that is, I was only following the law. I think one thing that surely Obama knows that when the trials were held, the Nuremberg trials, it wasn't just the industrialists or the generals or the torturers or the death camp guards. It was also judges who were put on trial because they ruled, yes, German law now says, yada, 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 you know, death to these, torture to these. This is German law. So therefore, we, the judiciary of Germany, ordered the Jews to the death camps, ordered the Jews to here, ordered the gypsies there, ordered, you know, whatever the deal was. And the prosecutors at Nuremberg determined that was nonsense. And the judges went to prison. So what Barack Obama seems to be saying is that because these attorneys, not judges, these attorneys operating in the Justice Department, because they said, here is your justification, now go torture, that the people who actually did the partial drowning of individuals, hung them by their wrists for 7 days, put insects into their cages, that these people are not responsible, then Barack Obama has to further say in his statement, I would think, look, what they did was in violation of every single law that the United States operates under. But I'm going to release them from that because it is politically expedient now and we have other problems to deal with. I don't know what else to say, Hussein. Unless it's what I said earlier, that Obama knows that if he pursues this, he will be shot.
He's dead. He's good as dead. Yeah. Yep. That argument really made sense to me, Mike. It really.
So he's in a hell of a spot. He's in a hell of a spot. Barack Obama is not a lawbreaker. He's not a fascist. I'm getting emails already. People telling me, "Oh, come on, you know, Obama is just another patsy. He does what he's told to do." Probably to a certain degree, anyone who got to be president of the United States in these screwy times, you could say that about that person. You know, I do believe that you know, when somebody becomes president or when they win the election, before they assume office, there's a long period of time where they are told all the national secrets. They are told, they have briefings, they're called. They are brought up to date on where the hot spots are around the world in terms of the U.S. confronting other countries. And I'm sure that somewhere in those briefings, there is something that is made very clear to the new president. Look, don't come in here thinking that you're going to radically alter the system. Because if you try, two words, John Kennedy. And I just, you know, I mean, how else to explain the fact that a decent man like Barack Obama, who fights his way to the presidency based on change, we've had enough, we're not going to do this anymore, and all of a sudden he gets in office, and in certain areas, so-called national security, which is a joke.
He's thinking a different tone, absolutely.
Right. You know, Barack Obama may be a lot of things, but he is not a fool.
That's for sure. The other thing I was – I didn't mean to cut you.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just wondering, with respect to the – one couple of things that really disappointed me about Obama. I'm a big supporter. I contributed to his organization, to his campaign, and I campaigned for him, is the from get-go when he put this guy in Treasury, the head of the Treasury
Department. Geithner, yeah.
That absolutely, utterly disappointed me. This guy is the brainchild of Wall Street.
Well, you're absolutely right. And so many of these things, and Hussein, let me, I've got to move on because we got a break coming here. So many of these things like that, like what you just mentioned, it just raises all kinds of question marks. Putting Larry Summers back in, Lawrence Summers. I mean, these are people who helped bring this crisis on. Not Geithner so much, but certainly Summers. These are people who got us here. I don't know. I have no idea, Hussein. It's a mystery to me, and my head hurts when I try to think about it. You know what I'm saying? Thanks for checking in, pal. We'll be right back.
Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt.
Ten before the hour, thanks to the folks tonight who helped make the problem possible. Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg. The executive producer of all this, of course, is Catherine Bay. I've got to share this email with you because when, you know, I walk out of here on Friday night out of the studio, I just tune out until Monday. I have to, or I would go, you know, just totally crazy. So I don't want to carry this over, this particular email. So here it is from Tom regarding what he should do, Obama. Tom writes, it doesn't matter what he should do. We all know what that would look like. Simply appoint progressive liberals to every position in government the way Bush appointed right-wing fanatical killers to every position in government. You know, flood the government with freedom fighters. make his daily briefings through his spokespeople sing the glories of justice and freedom, appoint special prosecutors to bring every criminal bastard that's destroyed our country to justice, and quit appeasing the Republican Party. Next, he must go on weekly television and discuss the critical juncture of America's dissolution and put forth policies that ensure universal health care, free education, and a living wage. Next, he must insist on green industry at every level of community, from city to county to state to region to the nation. Then he must stop war now. And rather than drop bombs, he must drop books, medicine, communication equipment, and opportunities to those he is now busy killing. To do this, he'll have to make himself into a bunker dweller, surround himself with protective agents, take some clues from Louis Farrakhan on that matter, and above all, scream the necessity for freedom over religion. Let him describe religion for the disease that it is, but he won't do any of this because that's not who he is. He is a Christian, he is a centrist, he is a corporatist, and now, himself, a killer of innocents abroad. He has no vision. He expresses no vision. Therefore, I expect him to fail at his presidency as a matter of form. He is simply a placeholder, and if he remains alive, we'll just move on. If he did just half of what he should do, the world would come to our aid, we would regain respect, and humanity would go forward. But it won't happen. Not only because it is not in his interest, but because the American people have become an illiterate, cowardly, violent, and fearful people who themselves want death more than life so that they can crap all over our world as a ticket to their heaven somewhere else. So that's what I think. Tom. Okay. Whoa. Well, you know, but we don't live in that world. I know. I'm not going to debate or comment that. You know, I can't. You know, he's not saying anything that's not real, right? Matt's calling, listening on XM satellite radio. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Better than I deserve. I just wanted to ask you, you know, I abhor torture myself also, but what alternatives do we have when we capture someone who we know has information? What is the alternative to extract information?
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that with the people that we scoop up. You have to remember that the people scooped up were referred to as enemy combatants. They were not referred to as terrorists. It was only after the fact, when Dick Cheney started to go insane and drool all over the planet. I watched tonight on one of the, I think it was on MSNBC, an interview with a former I'm not sure what branch of the military he was in, but he was like middle rank, maybe a lieutenant, a captain, whose job was to interrogate suspects. See, that's all they are, is suspects. They're not killers. They're not terrorists. They are suspects. And so many of the people handed over to the United States government had nothing to do with anything. They were turned over because they were an irritation to the Taliban or to the Northern Alliance, the two warring factions in Afghanistan when we invaded that country in 2002. As far as I know, no one at Guantanamo has been convicted of anything. Maybe one. I don't know. I've lost count. But in listening to the former CIA or military interrogator, he's written a book, How to Get Information Out of Terrorists. He even uses the T word, although these are not terrorists, until they've been proven to be. You know, you can't start from the assumption that they are. But anyway, he said that torture, and enhanced interrogation, all this stuff does not work. Now, what I maintain, Matt, is that he knows, he's forgotten a hell of a lot more about this subject than you and I, people like you and I, will ever know. And he made it very clear that torture tactics simply don't work. The Army field manual on this particular subject lays out clear and precise and effective ways to interrogate captives. And there is nothing in that Army manual that has anything to do with torture or some garbage, lying, snot-nosed crap like enhanced interrogation. So that's the best answer I can give you. Thanks, Matt.
And I just wanted to add to that, I remember reading an article, and I don't remember where it was published, but it was about the way they broke, so-called broke Saddam Hussein. He was never tortured, ever. And they finally extracted information from him, and it was by, and this is after his sons were killed. I mean, he had really had nothing to lose. He'd been living in a hole. But they brought in some young,
I remember that
Arabic speaking guy, and they made him. They convinced Saddam that this guy was way up there with the Bush administration, and he treated Saddam very respectably.
Brought him candy bars,
yeah,
or something,
all kind
right.
of, and won his trust and got information.
That's the way to do it. It's all laid out in the Army Field Manual. This nonsense that the Bush crime family put out there. Were crimes against humanity, war crimes. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.